listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Well, you heard the man with the dulcet tones and classic pipes. It's that time of the week. You've put in your hours, you've done your chores, you've even polished off your honey-do list, so sit back and enjoy. We got this. And yes, I'm very humbled and proud you took the time to listen tonight, and I appreciate all the positive responses we've gotten for the Saturday edition of Straight Outta Vegas. Sports are entertainment, but they're more than that. They're a shared experience. As such, people want to talk about them. You've come to the right place. We've got a lot to talk about tonight. This is Straight Outta Vegas, the pregame show you always wanted. By the way, the last 3 days, I want to commend our entire Fox Sports Radio team and family for weighing in on the recent societal events. Their thoughts, their comments were very heartfelt and thoughtful, and I just want to say I echo their sentiments. Please, folks, be safe, be respectful. Now, I know folks have come to count on this show for game analysis, lines, totals, trends, props, crisp analytical thinking to make you a sharper better and to help you win arguments with your friends, but there haven't really been any games in the last 80 days, so we've pivoted. Now, mind you, I'm not complaining. I think I do my best radio when, you know, I'm not having to just do game time react. But be that as it may, tonight, before we get to our guest in 15 minutes, a true Las Vegas insider, Matt Holt, before I get to my random thoughts on college football, the NBA, the NFL, and Major League Baseball, I figured, what the heck, it's never too soon to drop some great NFL nuggets to give you an edge when the season starts, and I've got three of them for you. I'm calling them the good, the bad, and the ugly. I'm being serious. Now, this is real data you can use when the NFL season starts. First, the good. All right, opening week NFL division dogs are 55-34 since 2004. That's a winning percentage of 62% against the spread, including 8-0 against the number when they're a dog of 9 or more points. So be on the watch. Opening weekend for Arizona, Chicago, Cleveland, Green Bay, Jacksonville, Miami, New York Jets, Tampa Bay, and the Washington Redskins. So that means opening weekend divisional dogs. All of those teams are dogs at this point. I gave this trend out last year on the Jason McIntyre show before week one, and those who bet this angle just last year covered 67% of the time. Now, this is opening week division dogs. If you didn't write fast enough, I don't blame you. The podcast of this show will be up. Eric Roberts does a great job getting this podcast up within about an hour after we sign off. So follow this trend. It's been incredibly strong for 15 years, including last year. That was the good. Now the bad. What do the Detroit Lions, Los Angeles Chargers, and Washington Redskins have in common? They were all goose-egged in division play last season in their respective divisions versus divisional opponents. In fact, that means they went 0-6 in their divisions. So NFL teams that went 0-6 in division games the previous season, well, guess what they did the next season? 100 wins, 69 losses in division games the following season in the last 20 years. 59%. So look for the Lions, Chargers, and Redskins, who will all be opening day dogs, to cover. Here's the ugly. The Cleveland Browns, 1-19 straight up in season. Well, actually, there's a tie, too. They tied Pittsburgh a couple years ago. The Browns are 1-19-1 straight up in season openers since rejoining the league as an expansion team again in 1999. Now, this is a team that's been 4-44 in all games from 2015 to 2017. I'm not buying Cleveland, so proceed at your own risk. By the way, if you're wondering if there's going to be NFL in 2020, if you listen to Miami Dolphins owner Stephen Ross last week, there'll definitely be a season. And his current plan is that there will be fans in the stands. He said, quote, "I think there will definitely be a football season. The real question is, will there be fans in the stands? Right now, today, we're planning to have fans in the stadium." They've even got mock-up plans already on how the team could host a limited capacity of fans while adhering to social distancing in Hard Rock Stadium. The mock-up plan the Dolphins have currently drawn up will be featured, presented to the NFL, and if the government gets clearance, could include 15,000 fans in the stadium. They'll all have to wear masks. There'll be staggered entrances and exits, and people will have to order food from their seats, but they're trying to get back to normal. All right, speaking of normal, the NBA. Well, how about the NBA? Well, the good news is I guess the NBA will be back July 31st, which means you only have to wait another 62 days until tip-off. Now, Thursday, the Board of Governors will vote on various criteria, and this is what I think I know. They will bring back between 20 and 22 teams, and there will be a short play-in tournament to decide the final seeds before starting the actual playoffs. They're still deciding the playoff format. There are a couple of proposals on the table in terms of how they want to do that. And speaking of playoffs, they still have to decide if they want to keep the traditional Eastern-Western division format or they want to take the top 16 seeds based on record. Here's my vote. Do the top 16 seeds. Starting next year. Don't screw this season up any more than it already has been. And here's my rationale. First, all the teams in the NBA have already played 80% of their schedule. And this is a schedule that was formatted based on the traditional top eight seeds in both divisions. So all current records have been accumulated by what would be ostensibly an imbalanced schedule, which would lead to unfair and inaccurate results. So, and by the way, for the first time, I think this is cool. For the first time in a while, there's actually real bragging rights for the Eastern Division champion. Don't you want to see if the Greek Freak can lead Milwaukee to the promised land? How about Jason Tatum and the Boston Celtics? Can Tatum emerge as the alpha dog and get the Celtics back into the finals? Plus, don't go to sleep on the defending champion Toronto Raptors. They were playing great basketball, and they've got something to prove without Kawhi Leonard. I think you keep it the same. I know Mark Cuban is pushing for the top 16 seeds, but I'll make a prediction. I don't think the NBA will land there. We'll know next week. At this point, I think they're going to err on caution. All right, on to the rink and the ice. Well, the NHL held a press conference the other day. Here's the 411. The regular season is completed. The top four seeds in each conference are in. The remaining eight seeds will be determined by a short playoff in which 16 of the remaining teams will compete for a chance to earn a berth in the Stanley Cup tournament. Now, the remaining seven teams like Buffalo, Detroit, the Kings, the Ducks, the Sharks, you'll get nothing and like it. See you next season. Here's the rub. We don't know when they're going to start or where this thing is going to happen. Yes, I know Gary Bettman has narrowed it down to about 38 hubs, including Las Vegas as a possibility, and he'll pick two. I think he'll pick one in the eastern half of the country and one in the western half of the country. I know they're considering Toronto, but I can't really see that happening, and I'll tell you why. It's my understanding if you cross the Canadian border, you've got to quarantine for 14 days before you can leave your hotel, I guess, whatever. So I don't know if it'll be in Canada, but at least, look, give the NHL credit for formulating what I think is a very creative opportunity for 24 teams to march towards Lord Stanley Cup. All right, one of the things we haven't talked about a lot so far is college football. And I think it's perhaps one of the most important of all the sports because any kind of cancellation of the 2020 college football season due to a study I had privy to last week, or was privy to last week, try that again in English, it would result in about $4 billion in losses. Colleges across the country would reportedly see significant financial losses if the 2020 football season had to be canceled because of the pandemic. According to researchers, as I just said, schools would lose a combined $4 billion if no games are played this season. Now, COVID-19 has already had a significant impact on college sports, starting in March when the NCAA canceled all remaining winter and spring championship events. University of Akron announced May 14th it was cutting men's cross country, men's golf, women's tennis programs as part of a plan to reduce the athletic budget by $4 million. There are a number of Division I programs who have already cut athletic programs in cost-saving moves because of the pandemic. The TCU athletic director, Jeremiah Donati, said that a canceled season or reduced schedule could potentially lead to, quote, massive cutbacks. Now, it remains to be seen if the college football season in 2020 will take place. I believe it will. Although A gentleman by the name of Dr. Patrick Reich. He's the director of sports business at Washington University in St. Louis, a very respected university. He said he anticipates it will be played, even if it has to be moved to the spring, because, again, of, quote, the astronomical financial implications of canceling football. I frankly heard, through my research, there's about five different plans. One's to start on time with no fans. One's to start a couple weeks late with no fans. One's to start with fans. One plan has it starting, I think, late around Thanksgiving. And then the final one, I actually heard there's a plan where they could start in February, which, again, we'll still all watch, and that would coincide with the culmination of the Super Bowl. So that might not be the worst thing. If I'm a betting man, and I am, I think we'll see college football in September. But Reich estimated that 65 schools in the Power Five conferences would stand to lose a combined total of $1.2 billion in just ticket revenue alone. And the athletic director at Ohio State, Gene Smith, he told reporters just this last week, the school is also put together a social distancing concept that could bring in between 20 and 22,000 fans for home games. And I think Iowa State had the same plan and all the schools in Texas. So things are trending properly. Now, it's unclear if government officials and health experts will permit that by the time the season begins in September. We'll just have to wait and see. If you're scoring at home, and I hope you are, the opening weekend for the 2020 college football season is scheduled to be August 29th with seven games, followed by a full slate the week after. So, lots to look forward to. Let's hope that cooler heads prevail. Let's hope that they get on top of this virus and things continue to trend in the right direction. Get your free scorecard today, even if you're not a Discover customer. It includes your FICO credit score, and checking your scorecard won't hurt your credit. Learn more at discover.com/credit scorecard. Limitations apply. Coming up, I want to welcome in a gentleman. You're going to like listening to this guy. He's the president of U.S. Integrity, spent many years at CG Technology. His name is Matt Holt, and he's got a lot of information that will apply not here just to Las Vegas, but to all the states around the country that have legalized gambling and that are looking to get legalized gambling. I'm Bernie Frado. We're coming to you live from the Geico Fox Sports Radio studios. This is the pregame show you always wanted, so don't go away. You're listening to Straight Outta Vegas.
Straight Outta Vegas! The great Bernie Frado, folks.
We are back on Straight Outta Vegas, the pregame show you always wanted. I'm Bernie Frado, coming to you live from the Geico Fox Sports Radio studios. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance, so visit geico.com for a free rate quote. All right, let's welcome in a gentleman. I've known him for years. One of the most interesting guests you'll ever have because of his background and knowledge. He's a true Vegas insider, many years at CG Technology, and he is now the president of U.S. Integrity, Matt Holt. Matt, thanks for jumping on with us tonight, buddy.
Yeah, thanks, Bernie. You know, crazy times. The day started off so great. I was so excited about the fact that we had live sports today with the UFC event here in Las Vegas. And the world has kind of turned a little bit crazy all of a sudden as, you know, I just got word that there was 50 people looting the Easy Pond down on Fremont Street right as we speak right now. So crazy times, my friend.
They are, and we are certainly hopeful that folks will, you know, cooler heads will begin to prevail, and we all want to get back to a state of normalcy. Prayers up. Let's try to do our best to move forward. Matt, irrespective of that, we've got a job to do. One of the areas of great expertise you have was the UFC. We had UFC 249 tonight. Woodley was the headliner. How's the handle, and what were your thoughts on tonight's event?
Look, the handle continues to be amazingly strong. If you look at three of the five cards that have taken place since COVID-19 started, they haven't exactly had the best headliners. Even the pay-per-view 249, which is loaded with really good fights, didn't have one of the megastars up top. I mean, Tony Ferguson and Justin Gaethje are big names to MMA insiders, but not necessarily to the general public. There was no Conor. There was no John Jones. There was no Khabib. There was no Ronda Rousey at the top of that card, yet it still did 800,000 pay-per-view buys and more handle than an average NFL Monday Night Football game would do. You know, the card last Saturday did the same amount as about a Sunday night football game and was the second highest rated ESPN Plus card since they signed their ESPN Plus deal. The same thing again tonight. We're seeing a lot more handle than normal on all the UFC fights. Good for ESPN for being able to televise them all and people having access to watch these events basically across the country for free. And the handle was amazing. The one thing that is sort of insightful here and interesting is in those five cards they've had since the UFC returned during COVID, 5-0 are the underdogs in the main event of all five cards. That held true tonight as Gilbert Burns upsets former UFC champion Tyron Woodley in dominating unanimous decision.
Yes. Talking with Matt Holt of U.S. Integrity. Let's stay on UFC for just a minute because we've got another event next Saturday night featuring Amanda Nunes, UFC 250. Two-part question. Do you expect the handle to continue to grow next week? And part two, Justin Gaethje, the fight everybody wants to see, him and Khabib. Do you think Dana White makes that fight?
So, yes, I do think the handle will continue to grow. Again, they're going to have no competition next week, really. They're going to have the airwaves to themselves, that live U.S. sports betting market. I mean, think of the popularity that Korean baseball and Russian table tennis is doing, that the match did, you know, the golf match. Again, UFC is going to have the spotlight to itself, and it's done a great job of organizing a really good pay-per-view card next week. Again, not the biggest headliner at the top, but throughout the card, a lot of big names, a lot of good fights. I think it's going to do huge handle. Second part of the question, absolutely, I think Dana makes that fight. The only challenge to making Justin Gaethje versus Khabib is Khabib himself. His father is deathly ill right now. They don't know if he's going to make it through the illnesses he's dealing with, which are somewhat COVID-related. And then, you know, Khabib already with his religious background won't fight during Ramadan or certain times of the year. So, I mean, it's a challenge anyway to book a Khabib fight. He's been known to pull out of fights in the past. So I think Dana is going to try to book the fight. The backup to that will probably be Gaethje versus Conor. The whole reason that I think Dana White hasn't announced a June or early July Conor McGregor mega fight is he knows that it's going to be a challenge to sign Khabib and Gaethje and get Khabib to the octagon, and I think he's saving Conor McGregor as a backup.
Well, and I also think that if Khabib and Gaethje fight and Khabib wins, Dana would want to make a Conor-Khabib fight again. Do you think Khabib would give him a second chance after that debacle last year?
I think, you know, Khabib's one of those guys that he doesn't need the money. And where he lives in Dagestan, he has so much money compared to the national average there of what people really make that he doesn't need the money. And he comes from a very religious family. They're very dedicated to fighting. His father's a fight trainer. He really believes that people should earn their title shots. So I think Conor can get a rematch with Khabib. I think he needs to go out and win a fight first. If it looks like Khabib and Justin Gaethje is going to happen, if they can get that fight booked and it's on track, and then I think you'll see Conor signed to either fight, you know, Ally Aquinta or some other name lightweight that also has a, you know, favorable fighting style for Conor as well.
With Matt Holt, president of U.S. Integrity, formerly with CG Technology here in Vegas. Matt, we're going out to about 360 stations across the country tonight. Tell folks what you do. Obviously, given the advent of the overturning of PAPSA, and we've got 18 states, I believe now they have legalized betting with about 7 in the hole and 4 on deck. Tell people what you do and what you've been doing during COVID since there's been no sports.
Sure, absolutely. So we run game integrity, fraud prevention, compliance-related services for professional collegiate sports leagues, universities, teams, conferences, regulators, and operators. So we work with the Pac-12, the SEC, the Big 12, the WCC, you know, individual universities like Pittsburgh and Penn State and North Carolina, as well as the NBA, you know, big leagues and, you know, operators like William Hill and Betfred and U.S. Bookmaking and Monarch and regulators across the country. And essentially, we look for irregularities in the betting market correlated with irregularities within the events themselves. And we monitor things like match fixing, point shaving, game manipulation, We do the most robust officiating monitoring that there is, including establishing career behavioral patterns for referees because they all have individual biases. So you could see what's actually abnormal for them. Insider information and the misuse of insider information to profit off sports betting. So it really is a large array of customized services that we provide to both leagues, operators, and regulators across the country.
One of the things you guys have been involved in, we're talking with Matt Holt, U.S. Integrity. I understand you have commenced with an education curriculum at Ohio University.
Yeah, absolutely. What's really interesting, Bernie, about the industry is most projections that you see, whether they come from the American Gaming Association or from some other, let's call it credible source, have the sports betting industry in 2 years being somewhere between $150 billion and $250 billion regulated industry within the United States. For an industry that big that's going to do $150 to $250 billion worth of transactions, there's not very much education around the industry. We're still really immature in terms of our ability to educate employees, prepare employees to enter the space, prepare collegiate and professional administrators to be able to deal with the new challenges that sports betting faces. So we partnered up with Ohio University, which runs the most prestigious sports administration master's program in the entire country, and launched a program called Sports Gambling Education. You can go to sportsgamblingeducation.com and learn more about it. But the whole target was to, you know, one of the lecturers in the course is Bob Bolin, the integrity officer at Penn State, and his lecture is actually called "So Sports Betting Got Dumped on Your Desk, What Do You Do Now?" Aimed right at the sports administrator who was told his entire career, sports betting's bad, stay away from it, it'll ruin your career if you touch it. Now all of a sudden you're the University of Pittsburgh and Rivers Casino is directly across the street from your football stadium. How do you handle the new challenges it faces? And we really try to address that in this education curriculum, as well as addressing regulations, licenses, corporate sponsorships, marketing, legal aspects. Basically, anybody who's in the industry or who's at a big company, whether it's Budweiser or Pepsi or Google, who's going to be entering this space through a corporate partnership way, how do you handle sports betting? The things that you need to know about regulated sports betting to make sure that you have a more educated workforce.
He's Matt Holt of U.S. Integrity. Matt, as you know, it's one thing to be in this business. It's another thing to manage all the things you mentioned, not only including risk. Let's have you on again, Matt, when the sports return. I think it'd be great.
Absolutely, Bernie. Anytime, my friend.
All right. Thanks so much. Appreciate you making time tonight. He is Matt Holt of U.S. Integrity. Follow him on Twitter at Matt Holt. Obviously, as you can see, a wealth of knowledge. Because this whole world of sports betting is, believe me, a vast array of unknowns to a lot of folks who've never really dipped their toe in the water. Coming up, Sleepy has got an NFL best bet, and he makes a really good case. And also, I will tell you why the Major League Baseball Players Association is really, why they're really so mad at the owners. But first, well, let's go to the man he's known around the Fox compound as a man of great wisdom. As a matter of fact, just the other day he said, Bernie, always remember, don't sweat the petty things and don't pet the sweaty things. It's Brian Finley with the latest.
Oh my gosh, Bernie, every week the intros get more dazzling and more creative. Well, in your area, your neighborhood in Vegas, we had some live sports on Saturday. Gilbert Burns devastating Tyron Woodley, overwhelming him every round en route to a unanimous decision in the welterweight division. Burns' right hand was the undisputed difference maker. Woodley processing the loss via Instagram, saying in part, quote, you can't just get on the camera when you win. You got to get on the camera when you lose, too. I've got a weird piece for somebody that just got their blank whooped. End quote. The LA Lakers have something to say in regards to the riots and protests sweeping the country. The team wrote on Twitter, quote, we condemn racism, bigotry, violence, and prejudice in all of its forms. Everyone has the right to live free from fear and to be treated with dignity and respect. We hear the pain of our black community, and we will not not stay silent, end quote. More live sports taking place on Sunday. NASCAR, the Cup Series, strolling into Bristol Motor Speedway in Tennessee. Sunday, 3:30 p.m. start time, and you can catch all the action on Fox Sports 1. Brad Keselowski summoning the pole at the roughly half-mile bowl of concrete. Back to our guy, our main man, Bernie Fratto.
All right, thanks so much, Brian. As I said during the segment with Arnie Spanier and Aaron Torres, and again in the opening of the show, it's never too late to start looking at the NFL, looking ahead, and finding that edge for futures bets. And Sleepy's come up with a real good one. Having to do with Baltimore Ravens quarterback Lamar Jackson, clearly his weapon, his feet, his ability to keep plays alive and run the ball with the best of them is sensational. But sometimes what comes up must come down. And Sleepy's got some very good reasons why you might want to look at a certain side of the prop bet featuring Lamar Jackson. Let's give it a listen.
All right, guys, here we go. Saturday night straight out of Vegas. Best bet. This is an NFL future wagers. I'm going to go ahead. I'm going to play Lamar Jackson under 920 rushing yards on the season. Bernie, here's my thinking. First off, the Ravens and Lamar Jackson, I think they're going to have big targets on their back each and every week. I would expect teams to go ahead and give a real effort and to script a real game plan from stopping Jackson from running the ball this season. How do they do that? Easily. Game tape. This is now the second season for Jackson, and I would suspect teams have far more time this season versus last season to go ahead and prepare and watch that game tape because of the coronavirus. Now, here's another strong factor. The Ravens will play 10 out of their 16 games against teams that saw them last season. So a second look now and game tape, I think Jackson might be in a little bit of trouble running the ball as easily as he did last year. We've also heard the news over the last couple days that Harbaugh really wants Lamar Jackson to start throwing the ball down the field, getting a hold and getting a grip for that deep ball. Hence, more throwing, less running. We also have the chance that Lamar Jackson ends up getting injured. Now, Jackson ran for a quarterback record 176 attempts last season. If Jackson truly is the Ravens' franchise quarterback, they have to limit his rushing attempts. I also ask myself, what real incentive does Jackson have to go ahead and break his own record? Well, I would suspect none, and I doubt the Ravens care either. You know, John Harbaugh was a big backer and a big believer in Lamar Jackson last year. He wanted him to get that rushing record, and kudos to Harbaugh and Jackson for go ahead and getting that done. But I really think the ultimate goal here for the Ravens and Jackson is to make him a better passer, to keep him healthy, and eventually win a Super Bowl. So, guys, my NFL future best bet, Lamar Jackson, under 920 rush yards.
I completely agree with Sleepy for all the reasons that he just mentioned. And you know that given the fact that teams have Lamar Jackson on film and they'll key on him and they know his tendencies and he's had over 30 starts now, this is a situation where partly it's going to involve maintaining his health too. You don't want your quarterback getting hit that much. Not that he was, but Sleepy brought up a lot of great points. Lamar Jackson would have to average rushing for about 60 yards per game every game to go over that total. I think Sleepy has got a winner there, Lamar Jackson under yards rushing this year. I believe it was 920. All right, let's talk a little baseball, shall we? Because, and by the way, I'll be on tomorrow morning at 8:20 Pacific with Mike Harmon and LeVar Arrington talking about, I have a lot of great baseball insiders. I broke into my radio career in June of 94. I covered the strike in 1994 and everything leading up to it. And as I've told folks, the mood, the intransigence between the two sides, the inflexibility, the lack of cooperation, the acrimony, it's eerily similar. But I want to share something that I don't think is being reported to a great degree, and that is before any of this stuff happened, the COVID-19 pandemic canceled the world. Look, there were the Major League Baseball and union negotiations heading into 2021 with the CBA expiring next year were already going to be very contentious, just like 1994, and here's why. Baseball is currently an $11 billion industry, but the player percentages of revenues, they've been shrinking for the past several years. And when the players agreed to the salary tax a few years back, or excuse me, try that again, luxury tax a few years back. It was supposed to be a competitive balance tool, but the owners have been basically using it and allowing it to function as sort of a de facto salary cap. Now, why do I say that? First of all, only two teams last year, the Red Sox and the Nationals, exceeded the luxury tax threshold, which for last season was $197 million per team. Let me give that some perspective. In 2008, baseball was a $5 billion industry. Now, I just said it's an $11 billion industry now. But in 2008, it was a $5 billion industry, and at that time, the luxury tax threshold was at $155 million per team. Now, baseball's an $11 billion industry, and the luxury tax threshold is $197 million per team. That means revenues since 2008 in Major League Baseball have more than doubled. However, the luxury tax limit is only up about 25%, and it's only slated to raise to a total of $210 million in 2021. The players are upset. They feel they lost big time in the last round of negotiations, and I would not call this current negotiation a negotiation anyway. I call it a test of wills, and there's some real question of whether or not there'll be baseball. And I know I'm hearing things like there's too much to lose. Well, in August of 94, they said the same thing as well. On July 29th, 1994, the Baseball Players Union set August 11th as a strike date. And immediately, Murray Chass of the New York Times wrote, "They'll never strike because the union has too much to lose. This is the most money they've ever made. By the way, we're having a glorious season. Tony Gwynn was hitting 394. He's going to hit 400. Matt Williams had 43 home runs. He was going to pass Roger Maris. The Expos were in first place. The Cleveland Indians were in first place." Well, guess what? You heard the same fortune cookie wisdom and platitudes then that you're hearing now. They won't do it because look at the conditions. There are people out of work, and yes, there are. I don't know if they care. And I'm not so sure what the percentage is, but I think it's more than you think of players that really don't want to play and owners that really don't want to have a season. Monday is supposed to be the soft date in terms of having a deal so they can have an 82-game season. They're not going to have a deal Monday. The players' union hasn't even responded to the counter, or they haven't even formulated a counteroffer to what the owners put forth last Tuesday with that salary sliding scale, in which, in some cases, like Mike Trout, they take about a 75% pay cut. Stay tuned. I suppose anything could happen. Bob Uecker once hit a home run off Sandy Koufax, but I don't feel optimistic. I'm not saying they're not going to play. I'm saying it's a coin flip, and that's what people on the inside are telling me. It's a coin flip. What does it mean when Geico says just 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance? It means you probably should have gone to geico.com 15 minutes ago. Up next, you know him, you love him, you can't live without him. He got a promotion. It's now Mackin on Sports. Given the great job Mackenzie Rivers does with all of his great research every week, we've got some NFL stuff for you. You're going to want to hear that as well. I'm Bernie Fratto. We're coming to you live from the Geico Fox Sports Radio studios. This is the pregame show you always wanted. So don't go away. You're listening to Straight Outta Vegas.
Straight Outta Vegas!
One of the best in the business, Bernie Fratto.
Hey, get your free credit scorecard today, even if you're not a Discover customer. To include your FICO credit score and checking your scorecard won't hurt your credit. Learn more at discover.com/creditscorecard. Limitations apply. We're back on Straight Outta Vegas, the pregame show you always wanted. I'm Bernie Fratto coming to you live from the Geico Fox Sports Radio studios. Before we go any further, let me thank my broadcast team back in Los Angeles, Chris Perfett, Eric Roberts, Brian Finley, turning all the dials, keeping us glued together. Thanks so much, guys, for all the work you do, including the week leading up to our Saturday night show. Let's welcome in the gentleman. You know him, you love him, you can't live without him. Introducing Mackin on Sports, and then continuing with our NFL theme, Mackenzie. One of the things you've uncovered this week, it's great research, having to do with the affect of teams who've had changes, whether it's one of the major coaching positions, an offensive coordinator, a defensive coordinator, a new quarterback, a new head coach, versus teams that have no changes. And we've spent tonight talking about, I did it with Arnie and Aaron, over-unders on team win totals with the Jets and Chargers and such. Talk about what your findings have been in terms of NFL teams who have a change from last year.
First of all, Bernie, I just wanted to say thank you. This is a wonderful promotion for me. Mackin' on Sports, branching out, trying new things. So we were looking at this season, and it's going to be different from any season, I think, that we've had. However, if there was one comparable season to look at, it's after the 2011 lockout. You remember, teams were not allowed to call players, not allowed to have workouts, not even virtual workouts, until July 28th.
Well, yes.
That's about what I think when training camp and actual physical contact, physical interaction between coaches and players will start. So I think it's a great comparison. And in 2011, if you had no changes to your coach, your offensive coordinator, your defensive coordinator, or your starting quarterback, you did well, better than expectations, about a half game better than expectations. And if you break it down even further, it looked like OC changing was a big deal, DC changing was a big deal. Surprisingly, having a new head coach wasn't necessarily a detriment. However, the biggest, most glaring detriment was if you had a new starting quarterback. That is going to be crucial this year when you're looking at teams like the Colts, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, teams that won't have time to coordinate between their receivers and offensive coordinators and quarterbacks. Will they have the continuity to succeed?
How about the inverse proportion of that? New England, when you wave goodbye to Tom Brady and you say hello to,
exactly. Well,
we don't even know if it's going to be Jarrett Stidham or Brian Hoyer week one.
And everyone talks about so much of being a quarterback is being a leader of men. And that starts in April sometimes. That starts in May sometimes when it says, hey, you know, I've studied this playbook through and through. It actually says this. I know you're doing this. It's a slight change. But those little incremental nuances kind of establishes who's the leader in the clubhouse. And I know Philip Rivers, they say he's taking charge of the virtual meetings. I don't know if you've ever been in a Zoom meeting. I don't think anyone really takes charge, you know, of that kind of situation. It's kind of, you know, non-personal. It's hard to be a leader of men. And if you look at that 2011 season, every great quarterback that came back with the same cast and crew, Rodgers, 15-1 that season, Brees, 13-3 that season, even a guy like Joe Flacco, who never had back-to-back 12-win seasons in his career, this season did do that, did have 12 wins back-to-back. So I think when you look at this season, you got to look at guys like Patrick Mahomes, Drew Brees.
About Lamar Jackson.
Lamar Jackson.
Jimmy G.
I hope Jimmy G as a 49ers fan, but I don't know if he has the talent as some of these other guys. But exactly, teams with the same coach, same cast and crew. Like Drew Brees has been with Sean Payton for 10 years. He doesn't need a training camp. Aaron Rodgers is not in that situation at all with Matt LaFleur, but I think you got to look at Patrick Mahomes, and that's my best bet if I'm going to sneak it in here. He has all the same weapons back, plus more. Andy Reid and his cast and crew are going to be, you know, dialing him up as heavy as ever. I think they're going to win 12, 13 games. I think 11.5 is a steal. Over.
You know what jumped at me is when you, on this chart you prepared, average wins over expectations when a team has a new coach. What jumps to me are the Dallas Cowboys with Mike McCarthy, who's been to a Super Bowl, who's won a Super Bowl. Dallas is loaded with offensive weapons with the number one offense next year. Now you add a new coach. That's a positive according to your chart.
That's true. I mean, if you just look at the shortened lockout season, for whatever reason, Harbaugh did great. Rivera did better than expectations. And Mike McCarthy, he's not really going to be changing a lot of things. It's going to be, you know, weapons over scheme, and they have more weapons than they ever have, and the markets have loved them. They've gone from 9 as their over-under to wins to almost 10 now. Heavy juice on the over. People keep betting the Cowboys. I, however, will not be one of them. I'm not the biggest Mike McCarthy fan, much like Mitch last week came on and said the same thing.
Well, that's actually very true, but there is one team you are a big fan of, and even though they've got a big win total, it's your best bet.
Patrick Mahomes. If you look at 3rd-and-15 plays, I was looking at this during the onside alternative. If you look at since the beginning of the century, points added on 3rd-and-4th-and-15, Patrick Mahomes is more than double the next best guy. This is something like we haven't seen before. Markets think he's good, he's great, he's the best. I don't even think they're taking into consideration how next level this guy is. If I needed a quarterback, for a game tomorrow to save my life, and I can pick anybody in history, I still have Tom Brady number one. I might have Montana number two. It's not a long list before I get to 2020 Patrick Mahomes.
We only got about 30 seconds for you, McKenzie, but this jumps at me. teams with new coaches just blindly registering almost two wins versus expectations. Ron Rivera takes over in Washington. Does that even apply there?
The last time he had a new job was 2011, this exact season.
Yes.
He has experience pulling people together in a short time. I think, coaches need that first initial instinct to get people to get on the same page. I think a new coach can have that kind of spark to get people towards that direction.
Thanks so much. That is Mackin on Sports. Each week toward the end of the show, McKenzie will do his magic and crunch his numbers. Now, this is a gentleman that went to Yale University, and now you know why. All right, I want to thank Matt Holt of U.S. Integrity for joining us tonight. Next week, Steve Fezzik back in studio. We'll chop it up and have a lot of fun. That's going to do it for this week's edition of Straight Out of Vegas. I'm Bernie Fratto. Keep it locked right here, because next up, he's in for Jason Martin, a gentleman by the name of Chris Plank. You hear him every Sunday night with Arnie Spanier. It's a must listen. Chris does a great job, very knowledgeable, pinch hitting tonight for Jason Martin. So keep it locked right here on Fox Sports Radio. For Chris Plank, up next.
Straight out of Vegas!